Hi, I'm Joel.
And I'm Kishan.
And this is Tea for Two.
This is our BFF podcast, where we talk about anything from science to popular culture,
the arts and life in Singapore. Hi everyone, it's me, Joel, a playwright and performer.
And it's me, Kishan, a science educator.
And welcome back to T42. It's our best friend podcast, where we talk about whatever the 4G leadership.
Wow. 4G leadership, very important. Like, it's very current. They're going to take over, you know. Joel, which is your top pick? Come on.
The top pick out of the 4G, is it?
I don't know, 4 or 5, but how many ever, like, yeah.
Honestly, right, it's like none of them.
Yeah,
I just like, can we don't have like more like straight Chinese men running the country? You know what I mean?
But must have one, right? So if you were to pick, okay, wait, if I were to pick, right, yeah, for me, it would be Lawrence.
Lawrence, your friend.
Yeah, Lawrence, my friend.
Lawrence Wong.
I see it.
What's the feel for you?
No, like, it's very relatable, lah.
He does seem like, of the lot, the most like not elite one, right?
Correct, like, you can have like a kopi with him, like the downstairs kopi tiam.
Like, you know what I like about him is sometimes like he wear his shirt open, then you can see the gold chain. like very
like, which photo are you referencing?
I don't know, but I feel like I associate him with that kind of aesthetic.
Right,
somehow.
Right.
I feel like he's the kind of like guy that I might have gone to school with at some point, huh?
Correct.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, correct.
Like the nice abeng lah. The one like, who has your back.
Yes. Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
I feel that too.
Or this like really cool bus driver, right, who somehow ended up becoming the head of the COVID task force. You know?
Correct.
That's the vibe, right?
Yeah. So, you know, we give our vote to Lawrence.
As if it mattered.
Hey, you don't know.
I think, are we allowed to have political positions as podcasters?
This one is called political position, man. It's all PAP.
I think this one might be called party political broadcast.
Is it?
Yeah. Except it's party!
Party! So it's the end of Pride, man.
It is the end of Pride, American Pride season.
American Pride season, la, yeah, la, yeah.
You know what, Kishan?
What?
It's also the end of season 2 of T42.
Say it isn't so.
It is so.
But yes, truly, this is the final episode of season 2 because tired lah. I'm tired lah.
I need to not hear my voice for a while.
Girl.
I'm going to go on a silent retreat.
I cannot lie, teacher.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. Dear listeners, if you feel like you want to help Kishan, please send Pi Pak Kau.
Yeah. Yes.
Send us Pi
Pak Kau. Please send me Pi Pak Kau. I love it.
Yeah. Okay, so this episode, right, we thought, you know, it's the end of Pride, so we should sum up, right, like a bunch of like gay and queer related stuff that happened in the past couple of weeks.
Because got a lot, like.
Yeah, the end of Pride always brings with it some kind of bullshit, right?
Absolutely.
Especially in Singapore. Mm. So many things to talk about.
So many.
We should get on with it, Kishan.
Let's.
So I guess we were to start off today's episode with a kind of little review of a show that's been getting quite a bit of attention on the interwebs lately. It's Wild Rice's production of Pam Wee's show, Fug Hug. I think we should say it like this so we don't upset people. Fug Hug. Let's see how long we can get on with it. Fug Hug.
Very difficult.
Yeah, a bit difficult.
Yeah. So it so happened at last.
We saw it a few days ago at the beautiful Niang Kongsi Theatre at Wild Rice. Some background info about the show. It is a show that Pam first made in 2018. I can't remember under what context. Basically, it's a story of her. It's a love story that she's written to like the gay community in Singapore and all her gay friends. And it's kind of like also an autobiography of how she became friends with so many gays.
Right.
And her kind of like introspecting on the meaning of a fat hat, how one becomes a fat hat.
That's
right. And you know what, like allyship looks like. And it's also a history of like Singapore theatre, you know, as she's experienced it.
Yeah, and it was also intertwined with the premiere of the Niang Kongsi Theatre. It was supposed to be one of the first
It was supposed to have been one of the opening shows, but then that didn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot. The show is doing a lot. And then like all along there's songs and there's glitter. It's a very like razzle-dazzle show.
Fabulous. Yeah.
What do you think about
it? I loved it. I really, really loved it. Particularly because of Julianne Wong.
Oh yeah, so some background for here, right? So Pam's not doing the show alone. It's done in the style of like a kind of like piano bar review.
Absolutely,
where
yeah.
There is a pianist next to her as she's doing it, who accompanies her as she sings. But then like, so Julianne Wong, who's a composer, a singer, a violinist, a pianist.
Amazing. I mean, he's so talented because
and he does a bit of acting as well.
He does. Yeah. So that's the thing I didn't expect. I expected him to just be like musical director lah, because that's what he was credited in the show. I didn't expect him to co-star together with Pam and a dancer called Gino, right? Named Gino. So I was like, oh wow, he actually had a lot more than just sitting on there
because
singing.
Like, as the show goes on, you actually learn that he's not just there incidentally. He's also there because like he's You know, he's been friends with Pam since he was a young boy and like a young teenager. Yeah. And like that's, you know, like his, as it emerges, spoiler alert, right? Like he, Pam was one of the first people that he came out to.
Yeah. And when that story was being told, he took center stage. Yeah. So Pam, like, you know, stepped back a bit and Pam asked, I think, how was it like for you coming out or when did you know? Yeah. Stuff like that. And I thought it was very lovingly done and it was very carefully done, even though the title is Fag Hag and it's about Pam's experiences. Right. I think she centers gay men's, the gay men that she meets in her life, she centers their stories in the whole thing. Right. And the whole show allows us access to these stories through Pam. So there was a lot of love in the entire production. There was a lot of sensitivity in the entire production. Yeah. I enjoy it.
What I loved about it was just how, like, it's a show that only Pam could have made.
Exactly.
And it's a show that very subtly kind of traces the what it was like to be gay and a friend of gay people in the 90s, in the late 80s, in the 90s.
And even the noughties.
True to the noughties, right?
It's like a history of sorts, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that also runs parallel with theatre, runs parallel with activism in Singapore. And all could only be told through Pam because of her involvement in the entire thing.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of nice, right, to look at gay male culture, you know, through someone who's not gay. It's kind of nice as a queer person to kind of step back from it and go, oh, this is how it looks, you know. You know, there's always something kind of like, you don't see that perspective super often.
That's it, like, it gives you perspective. Yeah.
I guess like what we're skirting around, right, is the question of like framing and centering, right? Because I think like a lot of my nervousness about the show when I first heard about it was a bit like, hey, how come this straight woman, I mean, I love Pam and I know her and I also know her place, you know, in the community, but like, you know, the optics of it can be a bit like,
it can
look a bit problematic, right? Yeah. Why is this straight woman centering herself in the story, you know,
of gay
liberation, right? Which she doesn't. So I mean, it's things like what you said, right? It's like actually she's sharing a stage with a gay man who is actually playing a very strong role, who actually has a biographical reason to be there. But then also it's like, yeah, you know, through the telling of the story, right, this woman has really earned the right to tell this story. Do you know what I mean?
She's done so much for the community.
Yeah, she's like been an activist. She's actually like been on the forefront of activist movements, like constitutional challenges, parliamentary hearings on
trans. She's one of the few people who first set up Pink Dog.
Yeah, she's in that crowd. Exactly. You know? And then she's cared for and been, you know, at the side of so many gay men through, you know, all sorts of ups and downs. It made me think a lot about like, actually, huh? People say, you know, that thing that comes out a lot in social justice spaces, which is like, you know, as an ally, you need to know when to cede space. Actually, that made me think, actually, you know what? Like, at sometimes when they really earn it, allies should feel empowered to take.
Yeah, and sometimes allies can say things that perhaps maybe people in the queer community cannot for fear of being persecuted or
any,
you know,
minority group.
Yeah,
right?
Minority. Yeah, yeah. So I think it's important, lah.
It's like, yeah, if you got so much privilege, wield it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, funny, make a show about it. Because like the part of the show near the end, especially, is this very plaintive appeal to like the society at large, right? Whoever's watching, to kind of like, can we please get this done? You know what I mean? Can we please get this
meaning the repeal?
Yeah, the repeal. Can we please just get this law out of the books? It's reached, you know, it's like we said this on the podcast many times, right? It's reached a point of absurdity.
Yeah.
We all feel very stuck. And the show really gives voice to that sense of how it's not just gay people who feel stuck, but the people who love them who feel very stuck and who have tried very hard to push against it but keep getting battered down and down. And you know, actually the sad thing is near the end, right? She was telling this story of how like in the 2000s things were picking up and looking very kind of like
with like the nation parties.
Yeah, because of
some liberation aspect of it, lah.
Because Goh Chok Tong had come out to say in the 90s somewhere,
they're also
like,
human.
Yeah, they're also human, you know.
Yeah, human.
Yeah, they are born this way. And then like there was a period of liberalization that was very quickly tamped down and that we are now living in the aftermath of that.
Yeah.
You know, so what I was saying is that there was a kind of sadness to that story she was telling, and then she ends with this kind of like, okay, the whole thing is tinged with camp and glitter, right? But then she ends with this like parade of nations that have legalized gay marriage.
Oh yeah, quite powerful.
And then she, you know, when it comes on Singapore, she says, my great hope is that one day soon we can say Selamat datang, welcome to Singapore.
Yeah.
You know?
But then it's the way she ended that. She looked at the audience, there was a smirk, and then the lights went off.
Yeah, or something like that.
It's as if she too, like, when is this going to happen? I don't even know whether I believe it's going to happen anymore. Oh, like, correct. That was the sense that I got, and it made me very sad.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt But okay, see, like, I'm normally quite immune to be emotionally manipulated.
You vaccinated already?
Ah, I've been vaccinated against my emotions. I'm normally quite immune to it, or I don't like it. But I found myself really giving into it because I feel when someone makes something with so much love,
yeah,
it really just like vibrates.
It was very honest. Yeah, yeah.
Very. It's really like, I'm not trying to make a highfalutin show. I'm not trying to give you this like conceptual academic story.
No, none of that. Goodness.
No, I am just a woman who has many gay friends, who has been doing this for a very long time, and I'm sick and tired.
Yeah.
And I love everybody and I wish things were different.
Correct.
And I will make something glittery and like showy and camp about it in the only way I know how.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I thought that was really beautiful.
Yeah, it really was. And I don't know, for people who are questioning the show a bit, I suggest you go and watch the show.
Mm.
Right? Just go and watch the show and understand, because I found myself learning a lot
from
the show about the gay community, about the queer community in the 80s and 90s,
right.
and like you said, perspective, like
right.
seeing a community from another person's point of view,
right.
and also understanding that sometimes the strongest thing come from allies,
yeah,
because allies are like what you said, like more empowered to do certain things.
I mean, it's also this sometimes quite hard line that nowadays we like to draw between people based on their specific kind of like privilege makeup, right? It's like, you know what I mean? It's like we are also keen to sort people according to the privileges they have and don't have.
It's almost knee-jerk now.
Yeah, that it becomes like, oh, just because you're this is this, you cannot say this is this, right?
Yeah.
But there is something about Pam's position in all this that's very interesting, because like, you know, I noticed this linguistic thing that she was doing, right? I don't know where she was conscious of it, but she keeps saying
we. Yeah.
And it made me think, okay, yeah, there is a slight... There is a potential for that to be problematic, right? It's like, who are you including yourself?
Yeah, why do you say we?
But then, like, actually, yeah, like I said earlier, you know, women's
she's
really
the
earned
right.
it. It's like,
she's so the right to
think,
say
actually,
we.
Is there not a queerness that can be extended to, you know, people who occupy this position of being
to
very,
allies?
Yeah. You know, it's like, if you think about RuPaul's Drag Race, for example, right? I'm thinking about Michelle Visage specifically.
And all the guests that come on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But specifically Michelle Visage, right? Who is like, is a problematic figure on the show, right? But like, is so clearly an ally and actually just thinks of herself as a drag queen.
Yeah.
Which, you know, she kind of is.
Yeah, she really
You know, she's more camped than a lot of drag queens I know.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
And there's something there, like, about how this kind of like privileged discourse might try and shut her out of that, and rightfully so in some senses, because like, you know, she doesn't inhabit fully that position, but she's more than just adjacent,
deny people this access or this privilege or this queerness, right?
Yeah,
it's not doing the community itself any sort of justice, because it's also othering other people, right?
Yeah,
no meh?
I guess what I'm trying to say is that in these kind of blanket pronouncements where we have this very blanket way of saying yes, no, in, out, you know, we miss a lot of nuance. We can write people off without realizing their very specific involvement in a discourse or a community.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because I think like, this is why what happened, like, you know, with the whole like brouhaha over Fakug on the internet.
Correct.
I mean, just to remind people, in case you haven't been on the internet, on Singapore internet for the past like month or so, like and we actually mentioned it in talked about it on some detail in our previous episode, but it's worth going into again in the context of now having seen the show, right? Like the show, so as promotion for the show, the first song from the show, which is like What Is a Fag Hag, was posted on Facebook, on Wild Rice's Facebook or all social media, and it got reshared by Pink Dot, and then the combination of the initial video and the reshare attracted the attention of this youth-led Instagram activist account called The Bi Collective Singapore.
That's
who
right.
Who flagged the show and Fag Hag specifically, but then also some things that Pam sings in the song, you know, where she uses other slurs and in the gesture of don't say these things.
Yeah.
Right. Bracket, but I can say because I'm a Fag Hag, which problematic.
Yeah.
You know, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like you know, there was a huge stink race about it, right? And then the initial post was kind of very like attacky, and very, very angry.
Yeah.
And then it kind of mobilized a lot of people to go, actually, yeah, we find this very offensive.
Yeah, the word fag and hag is offensive to all of us because there's a lot of trauma surrounding it, blah blah blah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it was primarily young people who were making that that attack, right? And then kind of what happened after that was a lot of older queers, myself included, then come out to kind of point out, you know, the whole thing about the reclamation of the word fag hag and fag specifically.
The historical usage
the historical of usage of that word. And then, you know, kind of saying, yeah, don't overreact, whatever, right?
Sure.
And then it just became this huge stink where like...
Oh, there was a lot of tit for tat, man.
Yeah, people just throwing rocks over the wall.
Goodness, yeah, yeah.
And then at some point, Alfian Saad, who is the resident playwright at Wild Rice and the dramaturg who's worked on fag hag.
Oh, yeah? I didn't know
comes
that.
Out to make a series of posts.
To sort of school the young people also, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't received well because they kind of...
It felt like people were being talked down
to.
Yeah,
yeah. So a lot of younger people apparently saw that in that response as being quite patronizing.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. And then like Alfian goes on to share the photo of one of the...
Short-lived, right, I thought.
Yeah.
And then he deleted it.
Well, but he did post the photo.
Yeah, unfortunately so.
Yeah, I can't remember why he did it. But then he did it. And then like then subsequently got accused of outing them because like apparently the people who ran the...
They were in the closet, I think.
So it's like a whole mess.
Yeah, it became a whole mess. It unraveled into don't know what.
And all centering on the question of like slur discourse. Like, is it okay to use these words? Mm. Is it okay for a straight woman to use these words? And then like the politics, as we've already alluded to, of like an ally.
Yeah, just centering. Because you're an ally, can you say these things?
Such a, I don't know.
There was a lot lah. There was a lot that went on. And
but in the context of having seen the show, how do you feel about all that?
In the context of having seen the show, I think people need to go and see the show. I think there's something to be said about the internet, and we've talked about this so many times. The internet is a space where you amplify your own voice and it becomes a distortion of reality, right? Mm. And so, unfortunately, I think that's kind of what happened. People were so quickly to draw lines in the sand and to take sides that they then fortified their own sections and then refused to listen to other people. And this goes on both sides, I think.
Right.
I did feel that perhaps, at the very start of this, I did feel that perhaps the younger queer folk didn't have the full context.
Right.
You know? And then after all this has passed, I can see where they're coming from, but I think that everyone needs to see the show to understand that it's made with a lot of love.
I have a few thoughts about that. Like, A, I don't think you need to see the show to kind of like... I mean, I recommend it if you could, A, afford it, because later I found out that the tickets were quite expensive.
That's very fair.
Like, I found out the tickets were quite... I think I got a free ticket like through someone else,
I paid.
Yeah, but quite expensive.
That's
a separate conversation.
It truly is.
I don't know. I feel like, so my thinking has changed a lot since, in my initial response to the bi-collective call out was like, oh, okay, fact, you know, the words may reclaim. But now I see actually that, first, it's two things. One, there is a bunch of people who actually do feel that these words are quite,
damaging
and painful.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I think about it, right, I actually was bullied with faggot when I was younger.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't hurt my ear to hear it, but I can totally appreciate how for some people it's
the harm that it can cause.
Because as it's emerged, right, I think like some older gay men specifically were not bullied with that word. They were bullied with other words. Right.
And I think what was also said was that the intensity of bullying has changed, especially now that with the internet, cyberbullying.
Yeah. So my initial response to it was defense. Like, it's kind of like, this feels disproportionate. This anger, this call out feels disproportionate. And I still think that in many ways. So there's so many different ways. So many kinder, more productive, I feel, ways in which that call out could have happened. Call outs in general, I feel, most of the time, can be a bit disproportionate.
Something that comes to mind was there was something that they said where they used the phrase, I don't care. Yeah, like, if you believe this, good for you, but I don't care.
It's more like, if you're okay with a slur, that's good for you, but I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not about that. I was like, that's, you know, so I think there was kind of like resistance to the idea of like meaningful engagement.
Exactly.
In the original call out. Yeah. But that's it, right?
Okay.
I now understand that actually for a number of people, you know, that it's not just problematic language, it's actually difficult language, like, you know, potentially triggering language, right? So I appreciate that. So I then can see how the response going, you guys all need to sit down and be schooled about the history of this work, can come across
patronizing.
Very patronizing. And, you know, but then even then, like the way that was painted as like, I've seen tweets, for example, that kind of describe that as like, oh, that's so authoritarian.
Mm.
You know, that's basically just the authority figure coming out and silencing everybody. See, that is a narrative that kind of feel overstates what's going on as well.
But it's an overstatement maybe to you, but for them it could be because they're running with this narrative and it's not just a narrative that they cook up, you know, it's really their lives,
you know. It's very hard to figure out what the truth is on the internet.
Sure, agree.
And I feel like there actually is a lot of abstraction and slightly grandiose narrativizing happening on all fronts. I think like on the internet, when there's a controversy, a narrative emerges, people stick with it, they run with it, never mind what the original flavor or intent or in fact like words of the initial whatever were, right? So I feel like you see this in cancel culture a lot. Like,
why do you think that is though? Do you think it's just because they want to prove that they're the one being harmed?
Yeah, yeah. Because like it's easier to just go, oh, I've been harmed by this. And I will stick with this narrative and this person is an abuser.
Correct.
Or this person is silencing me or hurting me.
Then, I am the victim here.
Yeah, I'm the victim here. And then once you stick with that position, and then the you know, then on the other side it's like I am being wrongly accused. So it's very easy. But actually we know from life that actually things are very messy.
Yeah, exactly.
And lie in the middle. And but it's impossible to reach that middle if you are,
if you don't even want to come forward and talk.
Yeah. But anyway, my point, the point I was trying to make was that, which is related to this, is that actually there's been hurt on all fronts. There's been a lot of like negativity generally. Like in the first instance, I feel like, yeah, people could have been hurt, I guess, or deeply offended or worried or just like pissed off by the initial the initial use of fact hair, whatever. And I feel, yes, there were, I feel like an appropriate response at that time would have been to go, we hear you, we'll do better next time. Like, you know,
let's talk about it,
right?
Yeah.
And also say there are better ways to call out.
Yeah.
There are better ways to do this than to scream and shout and to attack.
To draw lines in the sand.
Draw lines in the sand.
So this reminds me of Kumar and Kumar's stand-up.
Right.
Yeah. I've watched a lot of Kumar's stand-up live and I don't know, maybe we've been to some shows together and I always find it very, very grating. Like, it's not like the quality of the comedy or anything, but because he talks about race and racism and he uses it as like part of his arsenal for like jokes lah.
Right.
You know, and he talks about Indian people are very dark and then you go into a club, you cannot see Indian people. Right. You know, that sort of thing. And people laugh and I just look around, I see everybody laughing. I go like, this is not okay. This is really not okay. So I never liked it. But after watching Fag Hag and understanding that reclamation of certain words are different for different people, reclamation of certain things are different for different people, I understand where Kumar is coming from. I may not
want
like
to sit
it.
There.
I may not want to sit there. I may not like it still. But I understand that in doing what he does, he has power, you know, over the people. He is using the words in a way that is powerful for him.
It's coming from him and not being thrown at
him. Exactly.
Right?
It's coming from him and he's using it to create humor and to control, no, in a way, it's a controlling way, like, to control people's laughter and to control comedy in the room. Like.
Yeah.
So I now appreciate what Kumar does a lot better.
Right.
I still don't necessarily like it, but better appreciation.
Yeah, I think it just comes... Okay, so like watching Fag Hag, the show, right? There were moments that made me go, that's problematic.
Girl,
problematic. So I feel like, okay, that made me... Maybe start thinking, actually, huh? You know, like we like to use the word problematic a lot.
Too many times.
I start from university at that time, right?
Correct.
It's like suddenly everything,
everything is problematic.
Problematized, problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think there is this like easy equation that's made between something that's problematic and something that's hurtful. And between something that's problematic and something that's wrong.
Right.
Actually, I feel it's worth unpacking it more as we go on, right?
Yeah.
You know, spending more and more time on the internet and calling everything problematic.
Correct.
It's like, yeah, actually, I think just because something's problematic doesn't mean it doesn't have the right to exist in the form that it does.
Correct.
Because
agreed.
I think like a lot of stuff is inherently problematic because it's, you know, especially in art and media where it's, you know, drawing attention to things that are actually unresolved in our societies, right?
Exactly. Anything in society, I think it cannot be so neat. It will be problematic, especially when it will be all
and then when it comes to slurs, for example, like one of the I've been watching like a lot of Lovecraft Country, which is an HBO show about you know, there's a kind of horror series that draws on the black experience in America. And you know, it made me think a lot about the use of the N-word by white actors playing racist characters.
Do they use it in the show?
Yeah, they do.
Oh my god.
In the 1950s, and it makes me so deeply uncomfortable hearing it and seeing it, and you know, even with the frame of history draped over it, right, it just makes me go it's because so much attention in the current moment is paid to words and who uses them, right, that it so I think like this is an example of like something that's problematic, right, that doesn't necessarily mean, and of course is the show is made by black creators, so there's a lot of framing here and there's a lot of like intentionality that needs to be factored in, right? To just simply write it off as going, oh, they can't use that word because white kind of misses a lot of like, you know, it's very baby,
the nuance
it's very
of
baby
it, like,
and bathwater. And I feel like this is a crude example, but you know, I feel like there's a lot that's like that in the world that we live in, right? Sometimes you listen to the way queers speak to each other, right? It's very fucking problematic.
Oh my god, yeah. They say words like whore, slut. Hey, whore.
Yeah.
Hey, slut.
Yeah. And it's just like, girl. Okay, that's very salty language. You know, and then easily you could lob the accusation of misogyny at that. And often it will be right. But, you know, I sometimes wonder, it's like, if we don't sit with this discomfort sometimes and really pass what's going on, right? We run the risk of kind of being quite bluntly censorious.
Yeah, we write it off as no.
Yeah.
Cannot. Without understanding nuances. Correct. With it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I think like to extend it beyond language, right? Sometimes I really feel then it becomes like when something is a problem or something makes you feel kind of conflicted about it, it gets translated very quickly into abuse.
Agree, yeah.
You know, it's like, I think like there's this discursive turn where we can very quickly turn something that may not actually be abuse into abuse or accusations of harm. You know, if two people actually sat down and discussed it, what's going on, right? Like they might realize the situation is not so intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel people don't often want to do that.
Yes.
Because it would involve some kind of like reflexivity that might point back to themselves and their implication in something. So, like, for example, right, with this fact hack brouhaha, I feel like if instead of screaming at each other from across fault lines, you know, what would a mediated conversation between aggrieved parties have looked like, right? And why weren't people interested in having that conversation? I think because on one hand, because it's as I said, right, I think it will involve a sense that we've all hurt each other.
Some level of introspection.
Yeah, and we don't want to admit that we've hurt anybody. Mm. We want to be right. We want to be the victim. We are in a don't blame victims culture, which, you know, in many applications is fine and correct. But I think that attitude can't be universally applied, especially not when it comes to negotiating problematic, difficult, unresolved things. So for example, right, someone could come in and say, as an older queer, I now recognize that, some of the things I said, for example, might have been very patronizing and not helpful in that situation. But in my defense, I was defending,
this thing.
I was defending all these things, and I actually found your initial call out very hurtful and distressing.
Yeah.
And then that conversation might go, okay, yes, I do see how that initial call out could have been very, hurtful, could have been very vitriolic, but it has to also be said that I was trying to speak up for people.
Sure. I think you're giving us an example how these things can go, right? But I think
because life is like that, right?
Exactly. But the thing is, we don't use this problematized space as generative because I think we don't know how to. Mm. We sort of just look at things in a very must punish, don't punish manner, because I think we reflect the state a lot. Because the state, this is how the state controls us in a way. What we
are you talking about the Singapore state?
Yeah, the Singapore state. Right. We if we do this, we get punished.
Right.
You know, if we don't do this, we're fine.
Right.
So because it's so black and white, you know, then of course we are going to behave in this manner as well. The moment something like that happens, we immediately want to punish.
Mm.
Yeah, that's just what I think. At least this is how I feel.
I think this is also something that's fairly recent in that. Like, it's writing, like, it's this whole thing of, like, what online cancellation has done to us as a culture. The primary mode of seeking accountability and justice is the call out. And the call out, is a problematic operation.
Yeah, it really is.
Because, you know, when you observe enough of these kinds of, like, social media social justice controversies,
right?
The call out always sounds by default virtuous.
Yeah.
Right? It always takes the position of virtue and correctness, and it always writes on a presumption of guilt on the accused.
Yeah.
Right?
There's no opportunity for, again, like talking engagement to find the middle ground. Nothing of
the
sort.
And the call out always puts itself into, well, not always, very often puts itself into such a strong position that, like, the accused right to defense is
nullified,
weakened, because anything they say will just sound insincere or dishonest or just pure gaslighting, whatever, right? So, you know, it's this impossibility of engagement because there's so many presumptions. And I think this is the primary mode in which we seek justice, especially on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's a problem.
At times, I go onto certain Facebook groups that are that are just filled with hatred. Mm. Okay, I do this now at a distance. Okay, mm. I go in and I just want to laugh. Mm. But sometimes I always sit down and I just you know, toy with the thought of just putting out a post and go like, "Hi everyone, I wonder if it would be great if we all just meet in Starbucks and talk." Because I see a lot of misconceptions about certain things, and I think it might be useful if we just come down and talk. But you know what? I half suspect no one will appear. Because they just, as you say, they don't want to be proved wrong.
Right.
They want to maintain their worldview as virtuous. Yeah.
I think I have a slightly more depressing and cynical view of it. Which is
so
that
true to form.
It's because all of these are online internet activities, right? And I think we forget that the one of the major players here is the internet itself, right? Sure. The way the commercial modern internet structures itself on the deficit of attention, it profits off like a scandal. It profits off opposition, right? Yeah. It literally profits off these things, right? So it's structuring our experience of our reality in a way. And I feel like the reason people don't want to meet IRL to talk about these things is because it's far more entertaining. It's far more entertaining to sustain an online feud. You know, it's also literally safer. Because you can do it from a remove, you can do it from a position of power in a way. And you know,
but in the long run, of course, this yields nothing, like this yields discord. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. Like, I guess it's entertaining.
It is entertaining. It's hilariously entertaining. It's also very distressing.
I guess this is the future, lah.
Correct. Hmm. You know what? All of this can be resolved, right, if it were just an email. Everything should just, like, next time you see something on the internet that upsets you, right, just send an email
and
say,
an email to the person.
Yeah, I had the following issues with this. Don't need to go make a slideshow and go
Probably halfway through the email you might even get tired.
Yeah, and then you go because the email is a sustained prose form, right? You might actually talk yourself into going, actually donate.
Which is the best case scenario.
Safe as draft. You know, as a queer at the end of Pride, let me just say that I don't feel proud.
No,
I just feel tired.
correct.
I really one thing after another, like, you got see the recent video.
Oh, that one.
The one that gone viral.
The TikTok video, is it?
Yeah.
tell us, Joel.
Oh, God. As if things couldn't get worse this Pride season, we are now all talking about this, like, video that went viral on Wake Up Singapore. They shared it, right? Of this, like, two children having this argument on the internet, right?
Correct.
And then one of them ends up going on this quite horrific, homophobic tirade.
Yeah, lah. And then, like, whip out, like, a knife,
at
right?
At some point, whips out a knife. Yeah. So we should call him Knife Boy,
right? We call him Knife Boy, like, knife boy.
Because, like, too lazy to check his name, but also don't want to, like, name him.
Yeah.
And then he says some really horrible things that I won't even repeat because, like,
not worth.
Yeah. And
not
then,
worth.
Voila, and then the situation just escalates to a point where now, because people first of all started calling on all the social media, right, tagging K Shanmugam lah.
Yeah, because who else would you tag?
Yeah, it's really called.
Like, it's really Hello Police.
It's really Hello Police, but the gays going, "Hello Police, please help us, we are being threatened with violence."
Correct.
And then Pink Dot issue statement lah. And then now I think the flare is under police investigation.
Most definitely.
Wow, tired, man.
It's really tiring, You must be really stressed.
I'm stressed, It's like, now I'm just like, everywhere where I walk, right, I'm just like, someone going to come out with me with a knife. Someone going to jump me at the supermarket.
Better be careful.
So I only wear t-shirt and shorts now. So I look less gay. Wait, actually, let me take that back. Gays in Singapore, t-shirt and shorts,
also only
that's
wear
the vibe.
And
that's the vibe.
How did you feel about the whole thing?
I have mixed feelings. It's very mixed feelings. Because, like, on one hand, it's like, you know, yeah, horrible. Please discipline this person. Yeah, please make sure he's, like, okay.
Please make sure he's okay.
Yeah,
correct.
Please make sure that threats that are made against queer people in this country, where there is a law in the books, you know, that criminalizes homosexuality. Please let's address it. Yeah, please let's address.
Correct. You know? Correct.
But on the other hand, right, when I watched the video, I'm like, wow, this is like secondary 3 school
got
canteen.
That feeling,
because
right?
Like, it's like when I will go boys' schools, I went to boys' school, right? And it's really like, wow, this feels very familiar.
Yeah, got that
I
feeling.
Said now it's on the internet and thousands of people are looking at it.
Yeah, la, you know what I mean? Yeah, then how do people react? Of course, they will react in this way, lah.
Yeah.
Because what else can they do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, don't mean to downplay
no,
the horror.
Not at all.
How bad the situation is, right? But, like, a part of me feels that there's something kind of depressingly disproportionate about the response. Mm. I don't know. Do you feel that way?
No, of course. Because like the 377A, it's still being on the book.
The 377A.
Yeah. Because the gay, right? The 377A is still being on the books. Makes people and it not being enforced, then we're basically stuck in this like neither here nor there position. Yeah. So how are people going to act?
Yeah.
People are deputized to, like I said before, people are deputized to behave and to do things in their own way, lah.
No, that's the slightly depressing part, right? It makes me feel very sad that we're in such a disadvantaged position as a minority in Singapore, right? That the only way to respond to what is clearly like a very, like, you know, silly young man saying very stupid things on the internet, you know, saying horrible stupid things on the internet. The only way that we can respond to this kind of juvenile behavior is to go,
we have to test, we have to trace, we have to vaccinate.
We have to vaccinate this fleur.
I was not prepared.
We have to inoculate this fleur. We have to discipline him.
Really?
We have to get the police involved because now it's a police investigation.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Same with the other incident that happened with the pride flag. I think.
Oh, which one?
So
what
had happened was that someone put up a pride flag. I mean, during Pride, they put up a pride flag at their house, right? Mm. And then twice, I think it got torn down.
Not once, but twice.
Well, not once, but twice.
By a neighbor, right?
By what they believe is a neighbor. Like, they don't know exactly who, I think. I don't.
Pontianak.
Maybe lah. Maybe it's near a tree.
She's like, hey, it's very colourful. It's very gaudy.
Blocking my light.
Take it out.
Maybe. But yeah, it got taken down and she was quite affected by it, actually.
Yeah.
And yeah, rightfully so.
Yeah.
But the police came knocking on the door saying that a complaint had been filed against her.
Right.
And that perhaps maybe she might want to take the flag down. Or they advised her, like, maybe you want to do something about it. Like, I don't think they were very specific.
No, because they
Please go online and check the story for yourself.
There's no law on the books anywhere that says you can't hang a fucking at your door.
Yeah.
It's like, what's interesting to me is that the police got involved at all. You know what I mean?
Huh?
That like they, it's like someone made a complaint, right? And then they actually honored the complaint. I guess maybe it's because
it's protocol.
But then part of me just feels, right, this could have been an email. Like most things in life, it could have been an email.
It could have been an email.
Right? It's like, so, dear whatever your name is, sorry to say, but someone complained. Just saying we are doing this as a matter of protocol.
Yeah, because like, you know, mask lah. Because due diligence. But you do what you want lah.
Knock on the door and then you imagine you open the door and you see policemen standing outside.
Scared leh.
Right? Trauma leh.
Very scared leh.
Trauma leh.
Correct.
As someone who kena police investigation before, it's not fun.
Oh, for what
lah?
For the boobs
ah? Ah, for the breasts. For the breasts.
For the breasts.
I don't know if I've ever told this story in the podcast.
You did.
So I shall not repeat it. But it's like, you know, the state, the police are fucking frightening because they are like, you know, they wield a lot of power and like authority. You know,
you don't want to get on the bad side, lah.
No, it's also just like the visual, the optics of opening the door and seeing the police there, and then having them attach their presence there to the pride flag.
Pride flag, and what you, what apparently like the gay people represent represent themselves through that, right? Scary, lah.
Yeah,
it's like your very presence, your very sexuality.
The thing
being
I don't
policed.
Know is that was there then a complaint made against the neighbor for having done what they did?
No, but I don't think they know who actually did it. So there was
CCTV. So the complaint is just like important.
Correct.
Everybody should just install CCTV.
Yeah, go find your certis.
Actually, if you're queer in this country, CCTV is your
mandatory.
Best friend. Yeah, it's like you need to have receipts.
It's
constantly.
Right up there with Luke. Yeah.
With what? Luke. That's rotted. No, it's really what. Like, I think we're now living at an age where we just need to be able to produce receipts like that.
No, you know? Absolutely. And if you don't,
remember what happened
you're disempowered.
Yeah, remember what happened with like small, the food, you know, like
the salad video. Yeah, he threw the flag at like the people working at small. The receipt was right there.
The only way we can activate her is to have receipts. So,
correct. It's very important. It's very important. Please arm yourself with receipts.
Correct. Mm. But depressing.
It's depressing that this is the only way we can handle these things. Only because we are paralyzed by the law. You know?
Yeah.
And by paralyzed, I mean we cannot act in a decisive way, so we empower ourselves. You know what I mean?
I don't know. The more I think about this, the more I feel like, actually, homophobia in this country.
Homophobia?
Yeah. Like, the state has, like, recused itself from being actively homophobic. Let's deal with that for a second, right? Like they say, you know, we're not homophobic.
Yeah, we value LGBTQ community.
We don't enforce the law. We just live there only because convenient.
You are citizens. Yeah, no discrimination. Oh, in fact, you know what we have? We have Pink Dot as a celebration.
Thank you so much. But then, right, like this idea of deputization, like, goes quite far in that I feel like it's not high level politicians who are enacting the homophobia, it's middle managers.
Sure.
And men and women on the ground. Mm. I've heard constant stories now, having worked in the arts, of people working in various kinds of agencies, right, who are just like, you know,
policing
in their own small little way, things like content. You know, my own shows have been subjected to this process where, like, it's like, it's not even high level decision makers. It's really like the middle managers who are like wringing their hands over these kind of things.
Because they don't know, right? Yeah. Because they sit in such ambiguity because of the law.
Correct. And this is how it gets passed down. Law, the parcel gets passed down, and like it's the middle managers who become like enforcers for all kinds. It's not just about queer stuff. It's about, you know,
anything,
like race, yeah, like political positions, all this kind of thing. It's like, you know, the anxiety. We are basically a country run on the anxiety of middle managers.
Can you imagine if you harness the anxiety of middle managers? I think you can like power HDB flats.
It's
like solar power.
Actually, maybe, right? It already is. This is the clean energy of the future, the anxiety of middle managers.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, just tap on that.
And not just middle managers, like, it's also just like
the everyday Singaporean.
Zealous layman.
Correct. what you call foot soldiers,
foot
right?
Foot soldiers. Yeah, it's like, wow. Auntie staring at you, letter writers.
Exactly. You know what I think? It must be so tiring to be individuals like that who constantly are in a state of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, this is not real anxiety. This anxiety that they put on themselves.
In many ways, I think this situation where we are run by anxious middle managers and zealous foot soldiers, actually a lot worse.
Of course it is, because it's not decisive.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's never going to be as bad as like police entrapment of gay men in cruising areas.
Unlike the last time.
Yeah, it's not going to be as bad as like police raiding gay bars very active show of violence, right? But I feel this is what is bad in a different way. It's a kind of like
violence is being deputized.
No, but it's like the feeling of it is like, it's really hard. The difference between like amputation and then being injected with something that works on you slowly from the inside out.
Oh, dear lad.
I don't know which is worse.
No, I agree. I think that's a very good analogy, actually, because now I think when queer people walk out in the street, they don't know who might actually jump up on them and say like certain things, right? Who might take offense to their very presence. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, I just dream of like, I just wonder what would it be like, right, for the queer community to take things into its own hands, right? Because okay, you think about like, so this guy goes, this knife boy goes into a police investigation, whatever, and is disciplined to the full extent of the law, right?
Okay.
It's like, you know, what kind of rehabilitation is that? You know, it's like, what's going to happen to him?
Yeah,
you
never talk to gay people.
For all you know, he might come out even more rapidly homophobic.
Maybe, we don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
I think
there
has to be a clearer pathway to redemption and rehabilitation.
Agree.
Right? I feel like the queer community,
the punishment must fit the crime.
Yeah, and the queer community should step up to do it. Oh yeah? Like, don't you think it'd be very funny if like every year at Pink Dot, right? It's like there is a special segment where we just like publicly shame like the three most homophobic individuals of that year. We just like,
we put PowerPoint slide right here.
We say, just hand them over to us. We'll take care of it.
Correct. Then they go on stage. Then what? Then they say, I'm sorry for being homophobic. No.
They go on stage and then they're like, my name is so and so, and I am a homophobe. And then like this slideshow plays behind them of like the homophobic things they've done.
Past or crimes.
Maybe it's like the video of the uncle throwing the flag.
Yeah, correct.
And then like greatest hits, right? And then, you know,
and then 1, 2, 3, we all go.
We just, shame.
Quite delicious, leh.
Oh, correct. And then this is like, you know, it's like you actually should apologize in front of the people that you've hurt, right?
And no better time than Pink Dot, lah.
Yeah.
When everyone is assembled.
Yeah, and then we may or may not pelt them in the grand medieval tradition of public humiliation spectacles.
Yes.
I mean, I feel this would be actually more fun than the current form, which is like shaming people on the internet.
Yeah, lor.
I think it's the same operation, right? But imagine doing it IRL.
There's some theater
the,
here,
yeah. But then because it's pinked out, right? At the end, we must all go in for a group hug. Like we will embrace the flow and go, "You are forgiven.
You are indeed.
Yeah, you are now this year's Pink Dot Ambassador." Right? This is the full redemption arc.
Oh my god.
Don't need police.
Yeah.
Let's not
please take us up on this.
Yeah,
not bad.
Call police. Let's not, you know, don't need to get the police involved.
Yeah, we police just, really very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah, got a lot of killer
litter. Ask the police to hand him into the custody of Pink Dot. Mm. Ah, just like
the custody.
We will take care. Actually, this kind of thing needs counseling. Or maybe Uga Chaga can counsel homophobes.
Both,
Uga Chaga should have a homophobe counseling wing.
Yeah.
Not to say that they aren't busy enough dealing with all the depressed and anxious queer people who need therapy because of like homophobes, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be great if there were a counselling service for homophobes?
Mm, a whole wing. Yeah.
A whole wing,
well
right?
Well done.
What would that conversation go? Like, okay, so we understand you're a homophobe. Can we talk about why that might be the case?
Yeah, correct.
Can I ask a lot of like therapy questions?
Exactly.
Like, so who hurt you as a child?
Yeah, and then it just ends off with like a fast pass into like Pink Dot center stage.
Yeah, correct. There must be a through line, right?
Yeah,
between,
there must be.
Between Uga Chaga, homophobe counselling, and Pink Dot Ambassador.
That's right.
Actually, I think, Pink Dot Ambassador is very interesting. We don't need pretty please all this. No, we actually need reform homophobes.
Yeah.
We don't need people who are just like, yeah, it's actually, I used to be a homophobe. Now I've been shamed into it, becoming an ally. You know, looking back at everything we've talked about today and the whole month, and you know, just generally life in Singapore.
Very stressed.
This red dot is the best place to be, right?
But it like, really is.
Yeah, but you know, we thought we'd create a kind of guided meditation for homophobic people.
Mm.
So, you know, as a resource to
in
help.
In case
to put good vibes out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you run across like a homophobe in your life and you just really want to reach out to them.
You
want to
help them.
You want to help them, right? Yeah. To find a place of kind of mindfulness and release.
Yeah.
We've created the following guided meditation tape.
Specifically. For the homophobe.
For homophobic people.
Mm.
Yeah, we hope you enjoy.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoy.
We hope you find some peace with this.
Mm, and if you're a homophobe listening to it,
you're welcome. You are in a safe space. If you find the term safe space upsetting, imagine that you are in a football field or a cathedral.
You have been called a homophobe. That must really hurt.
How do you feel about that? Are you upset? Angry? Confused? Titillated?
Hold on to that feeling. Inhale the feelings. Let it fill you up. All the rage, all the disgust, all the confusion.
Let it build and build and build, and then let it out in a giant fart.
Imagine that you've just been douched of your homophobic tendencies. Fart every little particle of hate out of your body.
That's the last of it.
You are now an empty vessel, ready to receive new ideas.
The next time you think about LGBTQ people, recite these mantras.
It's none of your business.
Nobody asked.
Don't like, don't see.
Hey, Uncle, sit down.
Hey, auntie, no need.
Clarissa, you have better things to do.
Kevin, log off the internet.
There is no gay agenda.
Nobody is trying to molest you.
It is okay to wear pink.
Subscribe to D42. Follow our Instagram at D42Podcast. Hey, Doris, where's my phone? Huh? Don't know leh. Outside is it? Oh, is it? Okay, I go outside and find.
You now step outside the house. You go to the balcony. You look into the big blue sky.
And you think the world is much too big and beautiful for you to be a small, sad, hateful, cantankerous piece of shit.
You look into the sky. You see the birds. You hear them go.
One of the birds turns to you and has a final message for you.
We have to test, we have to trace, we have to vaccinate.
Someone's clear air.
Wow, just clear the homophobia.
One more round. Some really a lot.
Well, thank you, dear listeners, for listening to yet another episode of T42.
Not just another episode, our 50th.
Our
50th episode at Jer.
So I'm feeling very restive now.
Yeah,
very becalmed. Yeah. Not only is it our 50th episode, it is the final episode. Season 2. Can you believe we've had two seasons?
I never
seasons?
Thought I would have season 2 of anything in
Actually,
my life.
Our season is anyhow same.
Like, when we tired, we're like, one season is finished.
Yeah, truly. We're going to take some time to R&R, you know.
Really, like.
Yeah, get in touch with our energies.
Correct.
You know?
It's cancer season. We need a break.
Yeah, we need a break. We've just been feeling too fucking much. It's too much.
Two cancers in cancer season.
Oh my God. It's just like, I don't know how you guys deal with listening to two cancers go on and on and
That's
on.
That's right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
We'll be gone for maybe a month or so.
Maybe a month.
I think you expect us back just around that special time of year.
Yeah, the one where all Singaporeans are rejoicing.
It's called National Day.
National Day. Yeah, look out for a special.
Yeah, we promise a special. Scully don't have anything special.
Yeah, we just say only lah.
Or Scully, something very urgent happened, then we release an episode next
week. We'll come back whenever we come back.
Yeah,
la.
You know what? We'll come back whenever we want to, bitch.
In the meantime, if you haven't, please subscribe to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Or wherever it is you're listening to us.
I don't know where our voice travels. This shriek must travel very far.
Yeah, surely. Yeah, and you know, to get updates and to like interact with us.
We also have an Instagram account.
Yeah, it is at T42Podcast on Instagram. Very easy one.
Very easy, remember.
Send us hate, send us love, send us apathy. Whatever, we'll receive it all with gratitude. We need everything.
All. Yeah, correct.
Yeah,
correct.
And you know, if you want to, you know, stay engaged during the break, you know, just keep spamming Sheng Siong Supermarket. Or better still, The BBC.
We
would love some of that BBC goodness.
Delish. We heard it tastes delicious.
like a ginger snap.
Alright,
I think like that is truly all from us this week and this season.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm feeling sad now.
Me too, I feel a little bit emotional.
I'm so glad to have you on board all this time. I'm just so excited
Thanks
about
for joining
our
us
next
all
season.
The time.
Thank you for listening. This has been Joel signing off.
And this is Kishan.
Bye-bye!